Welcome to the Lucema Podcast. I'm Charles Lucema. Today I'm going to address an email that I got a couple days ago. And I get these questions sometimes specifically for private workshops. And oftentimes they have to do, they have a common theme to them, which, well, I'm just going to read the email first and then I'll talk about the common themes. All right. I'm a longtime fan, love what you do to help educate the next generation of fashion photographers. I was hoping that you have a spare minute. Okay, and then here's my website. I'm at a real crossroads in my career. I'm not young like many of your readers. And at 36, find myself wondering where I am as a photographer. Have made the mistake of diversifying too much and therefore have no real specialization. I would love to work in fashion, but all I've done is some editorial work for kids fashion and a few low-budget new media fashion shoots. Most of my work has been portrait. In short, I'd love any advice at all. Should I specialize more? Should I give up? Is there something I do better than others? I hadn't answered this email yet. I actually texted it to myself just so I could read it here. It's easier than pulling up my email on my phone. But, it's not... In some ways, it's kind of specific, and then in other ways, it's not, right? So, there are some details about this specific instance where, he says that he's done some kids editorial shoots, some new media shoots, and that... specific age. He doesn't give me his geography, which is usually kind of important. And so, the usual thing that I go through with photographers during private workshops is, especially ones that are looking to kind of specialize or focus in something, is, we look at it from a business perspective. And I think, at least the way it comes through or the way it sounds, I think that this photographer wants to know whether or not he can make a career decision that would not only be advantageous to him, his work, meaning financially, so, but then also be more interesting perhaps than what he's doing right now. And hence the question of geography and that why that is so important, because it's not that you can just make random decisions without considering the type of demand of work in your area. I live in a very large hub of photography. I guess you could say, very specific fashion photography. But just in photography, just with photography in general, Los Angeles is has enough demand for all sorts of different types of work. But if you're in a small town out Midwest, for example, I had a photographer that came out from Denver, and this gentleman specialized in senior portraits in his area and basically dominated in taking, senior portraits specifically, really specializing in young girls' senior portraits, and he was charging quite a bit. And he was cleaning up. He was doing an incredible, he was generating most of his revenues with that work. On the same token, he wasn't generating much revenues with typical fashion work. And so he would use his off season, when the school year's not on, to travel to LA and get, fashion editorial type pictures into his portfolio, so that he could then go back to Denver and continue to do that work that basically pays the bills. So now I don't know Denver as a market. I don't know each individual market specifically, right? So you know a few, I know the little things about, say, Miami and New York and Paris, Milan, and these major hubs, right? And then, of course, I know about Los Angeles, having lived here and having spoken to a lot of photographers that also live here. But geography is one of the key things that really limit you or that really guides you as far as what type of work that you might find in your area. So that's the first thing, is I typically look at the region in which you live. And then I look at the expanded region in which you live. For example, I worked with a photographer in D.C. And I often work with photographers that are East Coast in the, what I would call, well, not what I would call, but what is the New England area, you know, kind of northeast, anywhere in that area. And whether you're in Philadelphia or D.C. or outside of Manhattan, if you come from that area, one of the main things I'll ask you is, well, what's in your immediate vicinity? You know, what is in your city first? And then if you tell me it's very, very small, if you tell me that your city is like, you know, a population of 15,000 or less, and all there is just, you know, again, senior portraits or maybe corporate portraits or whatever, you know, it just, you know, limited type of jobs. What I typically suggest is, and I ask people, you know, well, then how far is Manhattan, you know, New York City? And if you tell me it's anywhere less than an hour away, what I generally suggest is to become a traveling, or at least by reputation, become a traveling photographer. So let's say you're somewhere deep into New Jersey, where it's not even close to New York. But, it, you know, by car, maybe an hour and a half, or even by flight, let's say 45 minutes to an hour. And I would say, and then you don't have, like, familial obligations that tie you down or whatever that would tie you down 7 days a week to your city. I would suggest to that person to explore the possibilities of regularly making visits to New York City, or specifically Manhattan Island, so that you can go there, establish a network, a base, be also known as the photographer who regularly goes to Manhattan Island, so that you're not just limiting yourself to whatever jobs are, you know, in deep in New Jersey, whatever that city might be. And the reason you do this is very simple. You're expanding or broadening your base so that you don't, again, I mean, it's kind of to answer the question of this specific photographer. I mean, he could stay in wherever he is. I don't know where he is. He didn't say. But if he happens to live 45 minutes from Manhattan and he can get better tear sheets or better tests in his portfolio, it makes a lot of sense, again, assuming that he doesn't have obligations that tie him down to his city 7 days a week. It makes a lot of sense for him to go even four times a year, right? Whether by plane or by car, to go test with agencies, get to know what it's like to really work with, first of all, top-notch models, you know, and a top-notch team, whether it's stylists, model, makeup artists, I was going to say location scouts, but, you know, unless you're doing high production type stuff, you generally don't, but still, hairstylists, fashion stylists, you know, wardrobe stylists, and, makeup artists. And, you know, again, you're going to come across other photographers as well. And just, you're going to be in a league where the average is probably higher than whatever city that you're coming from. And just being in that big pool, you can be a big fish in a small pond, but being a little fish in a big pond actually has its merits. It's not all bad. You just have more possibilities, right? So whether it's New York, whether it's LA, whether it's Miami, assuming you're in the continental US. And then if you happen to live like an hour out from Paris, or an hour out from Milan, or where else in Europe, I'm trying to think, I guess London too. I don't know. London, I think, is a distant third. But it really behooves you to explore the possibilities of expanding your base by going into the biggest hub or biggest city for fashion photography, assuming it's fashion photography that we're talking about. Okay, so those are the two things that we look at first, geography and then expanded geography. Then I look at generally what people have as their kind of core competencies, right? What were you trained in? What were you? What did you go to school for? What did you leave your job for? I mean, what was your last job that, you know, you did before you started doing fashion? Or maybe you still do it, you know? So a lot of times this type of question, trying to, you know, get into working in this field, into fashion photography, comes from people who are photographers who are amateurs and who are weekend warriors, right? And then I ask them, you know, what do you do from 9 to 5? What is your day job? And depending on what they say, sometimes it's applicable, right? I mean, I'm going flying this weekend. I'm actually going flying right now. Going to the, you know, I fly gliders, hand launch gliders, and I meet all sorts of guys. One guy works at Mattel. He's worked there for 20 years, actually maybe 30 years possibly, as a product guy. And I mean, through conversation, he asked me what I did. He's, you know, actually I didn't tell him exactly what I did. He had heard from one of the other guys what I did. And he's like, you know, we regularly need photographers. And, you know, I've worked in this department long enough where I have some pull. Now, I can't guarantee that you'll get a job, but it's very likely that I could throw your name in the hat and help you out in that way. So now, if that guy happened to say, you know, come to my workshop and say that he wanted to be a photographer, I mean, there's a clear overlap between what he does currently and then what some potential revenues, where some potential revenues might come from. So you look at, or I look at what they're doing now, whether or not there's any potential immediate revenue. And then there also is the possibility, you know, we talk about, well, are there any contacts within your field that might be future sources of revenue that you might be able to generate that kind of, you know, some money from what you used to do should you happen to leave that job and become a fashion photographer. Core competency also includes what you're good at, you know, whether, for example, like that guy, let's just say the guy that works at Mattel, he happens to be a project manager. Well, project management experience is probably, I suppose I would say that's probably one of the most important things that I think any photographer should have. And without going into a whole diatribe about being a project manager and then how that really overlaps, I'm just going to skim the surface and say, look, most of being a photographer is being able to manage small and or large projects at any given time. Trying to figure out where things overlap, a lot of it really is just you're winging it, right? The other thing I think I've said to be good at is being a Swiss Army knife or being a jack of all trades. At any given time, you're going to be expected to don a lot of hats, put on a lot of hats, take on a lot of roles, play a lot of different roles, and just be good at it or try to be good at it. So if you happen to be or you happen to come from project management background, this is something, not saying that you're going to be a good photographer, but at least you'll be good at managing the types of tasks that you're going to come up with or that you're going to experience on a daily basis or on a regular basis. What is another example of a job that might have some overlap? I mean, look, it could be anything. There, because the roles of the types of tasks that you do as a photographer is so expansive, like if you're an accountant and you go into photography, accounting is one of the things that you're going to encounter. I mean, you're going to have to do basic spreadsheets, you know, basic budgeting, basic P&L, profit and loss. you're going to have to, you know, be able to forecast, you know, if you did cash flow analysis, you know, now that's probably overkill and not really something that you're going to have to do for being a fashion photographer, but being able to forecast stuff and being able to say whether or not this is going to be a good project or going to be profitable, figuring out what kind of top line revenues you're going to have to generate in order to subtract out your expenses to in order to, you know, create some amount of profit to support your, you know, your lifestyle, or, you know, supplant your revenue or your original income from your last job. I mean, that's kind of stuff. Being good at math is not bad. It's not a bad idea at all, you know. Like, how do I come up with the pricing that I have for my workshops? Well, that's a different question. But at least in the beginning, you kind of look at... Actually, that's an altogether different question. You know, it has nothing to do with profit or loss for me. It's actually way more of a marketing question and branding question. To which I'll just touch on very, very briefly and tell you that, yes, you can price it at what you think you're going to need to make. For example, like, you look at your expenses, you add them all together, then you say, okay, I want to make 20% profit margin on top of that. So you multiply that by 20% and then you tack that on. You could do that. I would say, I mean, yeah, you could do that, you know, and a lot of people do that, you know, for their, let's say, you know, they make widgets, right? An economic term. You make widgets, you make whatever, you know, you figure out your costs and then you figure out how much money you want to make on top of that. Well, the way that I look at it is very different, because I look at it in terms of, well, what do people expect to pay for it? Where the hell am I? Oh, shit. Hang on a second. I'm lost. I'm an idiot. I think I exited early. No, I didn't. Where the hell am I? What street is this? Son of a bitch. Anyway, yeah. Somehow managed to exit early. Favorites. Here we go. So the way that I look at it is I wants me to get back on the freeway. Son of a bitch. How early did I exit? Not that early, did I? Forget it. Sorry. Sometimes I, you know, I'm driving all the time and sometimes I get distracted. Actually, no, I don't. That's not necessary. That's not true at all. I just missed my exit. But, yeah, it's more of a marketing question, because I think for how I price things, it's more arbitrary than it is mathematically. Like, I use pricing to dictate and to place myself on the sliding scale of brand recognition, right? So when you think, sometimes, I mean, what I learned in grad school, in my MBA, is sometimes the perceived value of the brand is tied to the pricing of the products and services. And on that token, I price myself higher than my competition to create the perceived value that what I'm delivering is worth more. Of course, at the end of the day, if your products and services are not worth what people or what you're asking for, people will eventually find out, right? I mean, you can't price an iPhone at what they're currently selling for and deliver basically what is a 1999 Nokia, you know, brick, you know. You have to, at some point, the actual product has to have some inherent value that is equivalent or at least very close to being equivalent to the price that you're asking for. That perceived value must be substantiated by some legitimate value that people can somehow justify. Now, if you don't, and if you can't do that, then inevitably or ultimately, people will stop coming to your workshops, or at least in my case, they will stop coming to my workshops. So that's how I price things. It's way more based upon marketing and branding than it is upon math and accounting. But again, going back to accounting, if you're good at it, then there is some overlap, although again, very, very little. So, but you know, look, it doesn't matter where you're coming from. You will find some applicable or application to of your previous skill sets, because every job has some general or generic sets of skills that are transferable to whatever new, you know, job it is, whether it's fashion photography or not. Everybody, you know, for example, like, look, you have to work with others generally, you know. I don't know of any job out there that you're hired for where you don't have to talk to someone. You pretty much have to talk to someone in every job. Even if you work in a cube or in a box all by yourself, most of the time, sometimes you will have to interface with others, and those sometimes or those instances are going to demand that you're good at human interaction. But again, that's kind of, those are all little tangents. So yeah, I will look at your core competencies, what you're really good at, what you went to school for, what did you study? Like, what did you study in grad school, or what did you study in college, or what did you like in high school? Where were your hobbies? Those are actually other questions I'll ask, because beyond core competencies and what you're good at, right, then I start to ask, well, what are you interested in? And don't just tell me fashion photography. Like, fashion is really broad. Do you like beauty? What is it about beauty that you like? What is it specifically that you will be happy doing all the time? I mean, fashion is very broad. Again, it's a huge umbrella that encompasses things like beauty, things like, you know, kids' fashion is fashion, right? Do you want to work with kids? If you don't want to work with kids, don't work with kids. Don't shoot kids' clothing. Don't shoot, you know, in this case, kids' editorials. You got to figure out what it is that you really, 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 really want to do, because there's going to be some sacrifice going on there where you're not going to be paid a whole lot, or you're not going to be paid at all. And or at least in the beginning, nobody's going to know who you are. You're going to have to build your book. You're going to have to demonstrate that you have the ability to shoot, you know, whatever it is that you really like to shoot. So we look at what's the overlap between what is that you want, what is that you're good at, where it is that you live, where are the jobs that occur for what you want to do. And then it's kind of like the intersection of all those things combined. So at least the first conversation that, or the first 20 minutes of our conversation during a private workshop is just looking at all those data points and then seeing what are the possibilities, and then kind of doing a basic SWOT analysis. SWOT analysis is strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, right? So it's looking at those variables for the specific job or specific field that you're in when you're trying to break into it, or you're trying to get into it. Anyway, I gotta go. If you guys have any questions, if you have any comments, let me know. Hit me up on email, Instagram, anywhere else you can find me, and I'll talk to you guys soon. Okay, peace. Hey guys, I'm back. I wanted to follow up on this podcast with a couple more points, because I arrived at my destination a little sooner and didn't get to finish all the thoughts that I had in my head. Up until this moment, I've been approaching this question from a business perspective, as far as this photographer, you know, if he were one of my workshop students, this is how I would have advised him. And again, I generalized it so that it's really applicable for anybody that's listening. But all that being said, I think there is the aspect of artistry and fun and creativity that I didn't really touch on at all. And I think it, you know, I, it's hard because, of course, that comes down to preference and what you want to do. But given that this specific photographer is already making money doing these other types of jobs, and again, he's, you know, he's stated that he's been very, very, very general, no specialization in terms of specific skill sets, in terms of a specific genres, just kind of a jack of all trades. But now he wants to switch into fashion, you know, as a focus, or he's asking if he should. You know, I think it really comes down to what you want to do. I don't think you should give up. If I were speaking to this photographer right now, I wouldn't give up the bread and butter of how you make your money. You can continue doing that. But really, in order to develop yourself as a brand and, of course, develop your skill set as a fashion photographer, it's going to take some time. And during that time, whether you have a day job or a photography job that isn't fashion photography, you should continue that path, because that transition to one day being able to make money and being able to specifically live off of your fashion photography revenues is probably farther off than you might want it to be. And during that time, if you have no other revenue, it's going to be challenging, because you're going to be pressured into, you know, second guessing yourself and maybe regretting the decision that you had made. And rather than putting yourself in that spot, you know, the sure thing is you've got what you've got. Stay on course. So it's status quo, but plus the additional element of building your fashion photography brand, skill set, network. And that's going to take who knows how long. I couldn't tell you. I mean, it could be years. It could be months. But more than likely, it's going to take you a long time. And you should never bank on or depend on being able to financially supplement, or rather replace, all of the income that you would otherwise be losing by quitting your job. You know, fashion photography is a funny thing. We've all, you know, in one way, shape, or form, all of us have kind of, you know, had some experience with getting some jobs here and there. And, you know, I'll be the first to tell you that it's challenging. So I would never want my workshop students to quit something that, you know, is paying rent, is putting food on the table, especially if you have a family, you know, or someone else is depending on you, to suddenly go into something that is so unknown. Especially when it doesn't sound like this photographer is wholly convinced that this is the answer to his or her question. But I always, you know, when I read this email, it really sounded like they were asking more from a financial perspective, whether or not this would be a good idea. And so I answered all the things that I've set up until this point have really been designed to answer this question or this email from a business perspective. And that's really, I mean, what it comes down to is, in an ideal world, yeah, you get to do this and be paid for it. And unfortunately, you're stuck sometimes trying to make these decisions with, again, maybe he doesn't sound like he's having a whole lot of fun doing the jobs that he's doing, which I understand, because most of the time, the paying jobs are never the fun jobs, right? There's a reason why they pay. You know, if it were that easy, everybody'd be clamoring over it. And soon it'd be commoditized, rather, just like, you know, young women models portraits or young women model tests. It's really a rather commoditized business and very difficult to, you know, turn into your bread and butter primary source of revenue. So those are my ideas and my thoughts. I would never advise anybody to. You know, you have to think and consider, you know, okay, well, what about going after your dreams? I think dreams are overrated. You know, I think I've said this before. There's a difference between going after your dreams, and then there's a difference between and surviving. And sometimes those two things they don't overlap. I think our society glamorizes and showcases those who go after their dreams and make it. The Oscar winners, the Emmy Award winners, the Grammy winners, when you hear those acceptance speeches and they tell you, you know, you can do it, you know, look at me, you know, if I can do it, you can do it. What you don't hear about are the million other people who failed and will never stand on that stage and will never receive an award, and you'll never hear about them. So I think our society skews heavily in favor of those people who do make it, as we really do try to push people to follow their passions, to do what they love. And all the while, I think we try to glamorize that road to victory by saying, you know, yes, it takes a lot of hard work. You're going to sacrifice a lot. But, you know, if you try hard enough, you know, with a little bit of luck and, you know, perseverance, that everybody can do it and anybody can make it. It's not necessarily true, because, again, you'll never hear about the ones that failed. I want to also leave you guys with I think I mentioned this, the Freakonomics episode that I listened to, where they interviewed, I don't know, like a bunch of people, and it was about quitting. And I think the question was, are you happier now that you've quit, whether it's a marriage, a job, a career, whatever it is? You know, are you happier now that you've quit, or do you regret quitting? And more often than not, people were happier that they quit rather than continued or persisted. I don't know what that necessarily means. I don't know that it means, you know, you should just quit when the going gets rough, because, again, if you quit, you're not going to have... If you quit, you'll never know. But if you keep going, it's no guarantee of success. So when I get these type of questions, whether it's email or it's a live workshop, it's really every answer or every person has a different situation. And you just have to kind of weigh the pros and cons for yourself. I am a very big proponent of mixing it up and finding the path of least resistance. So for example, like, I didn't go head on and try to take over the fashion world, fashion photography world, by trying to get all of the big campaigns for, say, Victoria's Secret, or be a Sports Illustrated photographer, or Victoria's Secret. Wait, I already said that. You know, like Vogue, whatever it is that most photographers want to be. I looked at it and I said, okay, well, what are the things that I can do, and what are the things I want to do, and what are the things that maybe are neglected or... you know, niches that are underserved. So if you look at it from an opportunity perspective, for example, I always suggest people go into, take their fashion photography skills and apply them to, say, senior portraits, dog photography, child photography, children's photography, family portraits, corporate portraits, underwater dog photography. I think I've said that several times. The point of it is that if you try to find that... Oh, and the last one, the one I used to say a lot too, was, you know, test with men, the men's division. And I mean, there's probably more money there, because so many straight male photographers don't like serving that field or serving that niche. The point of it being that there's always some opportunity that exists that is underserved. And when... you know, you're competing with everybody else, and everybody's got... You sometimes don't want to be the little fish in the big pond. There's a time to be a big fish in the little pond, and there's a time to be a small fish in a big pond. You know, I think earlier I suggested that you go to New York if you're living in the, you know, within an hour's drive or flight. You go to New York City because you can build up your network. But then the idea is to return home. Right, I'm not saying go to New York and just live there and then compete with everybody else in New York City. The point is to go there, build a network, establish that you are a New York City photographer, put that on your business card, go home, and then be the big fish in the little pond and say that, hey, look at my book. Look at how often I go to New York. Look at the people I get to work with. Look at my models. Look at my contacts. And that's the leverage that you have, and that's the leverage that I want you to apply, whether it's what you're good at, whether it's what you're interested in, and whether it's what your geography has to offer, what the market is there, whether it's what your core competencies are, whether it's what you're trained in classically, you know, what you went to school for. It's all those things combined, and then applying it to whatever opportunities that exist where those things intersect. Okay, so now I think I've said my piece. Again, thank you guys for listening. If you guys have any questions, feel free to hit me up. Facebook, Instagram, email, wherever you can find me. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll talk to you guys all soon. Peace.